You are listening to the Radcast with your hosts, Talon Couture and The Wolf, right here on the Radcast Podcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Are you in the doom? Are you down? You die on your own. Stand up for what you believe in. I know you have it in you. I found it within myself. So,
welcome to the Radcast. I am your host, Talon Couture. Alongside, as always, my pal, The Wolf!
What's up, what's up?
Yo, so we are back. Episode 2, Season 4, The Lion and the Rose.
Joffrey Baratheon is dead!
What do we think of the death? We'll get into that in a little bit. First, before we jump into the episode, as always, I do have some ratings notes. You remember last week had the highest rating in show history. 6.6 million viewers, second highest rating in HBO history. So what did this week's episode do? I'm going to tell you right now. It did 6.3 million viewers. Pretty much an identical rating. It is the second highest rating in Game of Thrones history, second to only last week's premiere, but it is up almost 50% in viewership from last year. So they almost got 50% more viewers than they did last year, which is amazing. And you know how HBO rewarded them for having this big, coming out of the gate with this big rating? They already renewed the show for a fifth and sixth season. So does that mean that the show's going to lap the books? I guess we're going to find out. But with that being said, it is time for the Radcast. So the show opens up. We're on a hunt. We're in the north. We're at the Dreadfort. We see Ramsay Snow with his bitches.
Get him, girl.
And his other bitches. And his bitch. Chasing a bitch. So, we see Theon and he's in shackles. Okay, he's running through a field. We see the brunette from last season. You remember the two chicks that were seducing Theon to try to get his iron member erect so Ramsay could chop it off? Yes, them two girls returned. The brunette is with Ramsay, and she has a bow and arrow. And they're chasing. They're hunting somebody. Who are they hunting? Bam! That's when we see the blonde. So something must have gone wrong. We find out the brunette said, "Oh, Ramsay, you like her better. Blah, blah, blah." So they're off to kill her. They make Theon tag along just to watch. She's getting away. We're thinking like, okay, she's going to make it. Classic white girl fashion. Trips and falls and crawls. When she gets up, she takes an arrow through the leg. She's done. The dogs get her. They eat her. Ramsay, the brunette, and Theon watch. Theon looks horrified. It looks like he's having the worst time of his life. Wolf, what did you think of the opening scene?
I thought it was great. It's a great visual. Even to go further back, just to go into the whole thing about the show and how detailed they are. The title alone should tell you. Just the fact that they started off with the Lion and the Rose. Those are the house sigils of the two main houses in this wedding. Everything that happens in the show, there, it's contemplated. It's layered. You can't take it just like a regular normal TV show. So when you're watching the show, it just shows that Theon is his name is Reek.
Reek, my name is Reek. Oh, I must not forget my name.
He's a broken person, but he still has some kind of emotion. So I think that's foreshadowing what could potentially happen later on.
To give a little bit of insight to the casual viewer, the people who may not read the books, Ramsay, you see his two dogs that were with him. This is not the first time that he's hunted a woman. So what he does is when the dogs get the woman and dispose of that woman, the next dog he gets, he names him after his latest victim. So whatever that blonde-haired girl's name was, that's what Ramsay's next dog is going to be named. So he is a sick fucker.
That's just, he is your classic textbook sociopathic killer. He names his dogs because he wants a constant reminder of what he does. Just like in real life, when a serial killer goes, they always keep like a little memento of what they've done, what they've captured. What he does is he just keeps renaming these dogs after his latest victim.
Now we're back at the Dreadfort, and we have a special guest. Actually, a couple. Roose Bolton, his new wife, Fat Walda, and Locke. So when Roose and Locke go in to talk to Ramsay inside the Dreadfort, we hear Locke, and Ramsay joking about how Locke chopped Jamie Lannister's hand off. These people are sick. And it's funny to these people. Like, they like maiming people. Hell, their sigil is a flayed man. So we're dealing with some crazy people right now. The Ironborn currently are holding Moe Caitlin, and that is very crucial to Roose Bolton and his plans moving forward. So he wants to take back Moe Caitlin, and he wanted to use Theon as a bargaining piece. So when he sees the shape that Theon is in,
and he finds out that what was done to him is amazing to me. I mean, the fact that Ramsay walks up to him and explains to him that he's been flayed. He said, this is what our house does. And what does Roose Bolton say?
My house. You're a bastard. And he also says, Theon is not here to be your plaything, Ramsay. Okay? He was very crucial to what I was going to do moving forward. He was going to be a big bargaining chip. And you fucked it up.
Like, Roose Bolton didn't know what Ramsay's like, though. I mean, to leave him there unattended. I mean, I blame Roose Bolton for that. That's completely on his error.
So Ramsay said, I tried. Okay, I went to Balon Greyjoy and I said, I got your son. If you want him back, here is the terms. He said Balon didn't care that he had Theon. So he said he didn't care, so I'm going to do what I want with him. Roose Bolton again gets pissed off like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. You went over my head and you did negotiating without me knowing? You know what I mean? It kind of puts Ramsay back in his place. I mean, what do you think of the dynamic between Ramsay and Roose right now?
I mean, I think Roose feels like he's losing complete control of his kingdom. His son is completely overriding anything he says. His number one right-hand man right there is giving those really weird looks back to Ramsay, not Roose. It's almost like he's more on Ramsay's side. That could be foreshadowing a hostile takeover.
To show his father how much Theon Greyjoy has changed and transformed into this Reek character, and how obedient he is to Ramsay, what does he do? He says, watch this.
Give me a shave.
Give me a shave. I'm going to put this straight blade in your hand. You put the shaving cream on my neck around my jugular, and he won't even think about cutting me. And just to add injury to insult, hey, Theon, did you know my dad put a dagger through Robb Stark's heart at the Red Wedding? He's dead! What did Theon do?
He stopped. I mean, he was definitely fighting the emotion, but then he still continued to finish the shave because he is a beaten dog.
Like you said earlier in the cast, that he still has some good in him. Theon does. I think he was so lost when he took Winterfell. Like, he wanted to get back in his dad's good graces, and, you know, his dad didn't give a fuck about him. The only people who ever really cared about him were the Starks, and he turned on them. So now he's completely lost, but he's still is a good dude. So when he heard that Robb Stark died, yes, he betrayed him, but that was still like his brother. So he felt hurt, you know, by that. So Theon does still have some human emotions, and I think that'll come into play a little bit later.
Oh, for sure.
How we end this is Roose Bolton has a proposition to Ramsay then. He said, okay, fine. If we can't use Theon to negotiate from Moe Caitlin, you're going to go take it. And if you do take it, I will make you a Bolton. You will no longer be a bastard.
He will get a pardon from the king to make him his actual, like, recognized, acknowledged son.
With that, he becomes an heir. He gets everything that Roose, you know, all of his inheritance. Because, you know, bastards, they don't get anything. But if he was an official Bolton, that's all Ramsay ever wanted. So what do you think? Do you think Ramsay's going to go to war to try to get that, to get Moe Caitlin back?
That is going to be a war. Because they are going to be ruthless. You're going to see weird kind of killing. It's not going to be your typical warfare either. They're not going to march up on the castle. They're going to be devious. Those guys are snakes.
And not to mention, the people holding Moe Caitlin are the Ironborn, Theon's people. So maybe he'll send Theon off to go try to do some kind of negotiating or do something really horrible in front of Theon to the Ironborn. Shit is about to get crazy, okay? And that's all we're going to say. That's all we got from the Dreadfort. Let's jump over to Bran. We open the Bran scene with Summer, his direwolf.
Taking out a deer.
And then they wake Bran up, and what happens?
They're telling him, like, you can't stay in there. You're going to lose yourself, and you're never going to come back. You're going to forget who we are. And even while they're talking to him, he has no emotion. Like, he's just... And you see the way he took the food from her? He's turning more and more into Summer.
He hates the current state of his body. I mean, he's a crippled boy. At least when he's inside of Summer, he can run, he can jump, he can fight, he can hunt. I mean, is that what you think this is all about? Or, I mean, is he just fascinated with the fact that he can warg now? Or what is it?
I think it's an escape for him. I mean, plain and simple. Yeah, I understand it. He understands its power. But, like, we were talking to Maester Smith off air. He's like, finding more and more ways of, like, escaping and finding himself. He feels more whole when he's warging than he does as himself. And that's why he's losing himself.
And like Jojen says, you could be Summer all you want, but when Summer eats, that don't fill your stomach. So you got to snap back into it, dude. We got to keep it going. Otherwise, it ain't going to be so good for us. So with that, Bran then sees a weirwood tree, and he has Hodor pick him up, take him over to the tree, and he wargs into the tree. Now, this is the first time we see him warging into these weirwood trees. And for all the TV viewers that may not have read the book, what these trees do is allow you to see into the past. Wherever there's a weirwood tree throughout the world, you can see events that happen in front of those trees. So when he wargs into the tree, he sees his father. He sees the big dragon over Westeros. I'm sorry for all the people that thought that that dragon, when they were showing the season 4 trailer and we saw the big shadow of the dragon flying over Westeros, that was not Daenerys invading Westeros. We see now that was, in fact, Valyrian the Black, a dragon from times past. Because if you know, Bran can only see in the past when he's warging into the tree. It's not like he can see the future or anything like that. So, sorry. I mean, I was kind of pissed off when I realized that too, because I thought that would be badass to have Daenerys bring the dragons this early. But yeah. So what did you think of, Bran's new power? I mean, we see what this dude is capable of. It's not just skin changing. It's not just warging into animals. This dude is like got the power to see anywhere through the world. So do you think Bran is going to develop into like a big time player?
I think so. I think he's going to be one of the key players. I think that's why they're keeping him out of the main run of the show right now. I think they're just keeping him there just to keep you updated on what he is doing and how he's developing. But I don't think you're going to see him come into contact with anybody anytime soon.
Okay, so that's all we got from Bran, actually, this episode. It was quick, in and out, couple minutes. But the couple minutes we dig in with Bran, Hodor, Jojen, and Meera was vital. I mean, we figured out a lot of things. Bran found out, in his vision, the Green Seer spoke to him and told him where he's supposed to go. Gave him direction. When Bran snapped back into it, he said, I know where I gotta go. Let's go.
Now we can go into the Stannis Baratheon plot. It opens up with a scene on the beach where they're doing a triple sacrifice, and we find out that it's his brother-in-law, his wife's brother, and she seems more excited about these killings than anybody, because to her it's this mercy killing. They're going over to the right god and everything like that. Stannis almost seems like he could care less. He's like, his heart's not in it. He's doing whatever Melisandre wants to do just because of the fact that he thinks he's going to get the throne going with her. He doesn't believe anything she's giving him. Then as they were sitting around the table, they start talking about going in to like talk to their daughter, who they have kept captive because she's deformed. And they want to explain to her what's going on and make her believe that what they did was right. And Melisandre goes in there to talk to her. The little girl's not afraid. She's sitting there stoic, having this like adult conversation with the Red Witch. And to me, I haven't read further in the book, so I can give my my guess of what could be happening. I think we're going to see her develop into something more powerful than she is. I think her deformation is actually a power of hers, and I think it's gonna turn into a war between those two.
That'd be sweet. A couple thoughts that I had on the scene is, yeah, like you said, man, Stannis always said, I don't want this. I don't even want the Iron Throne, but it is my rightful, I'm the heir to it. It was my family. It was Robert Baratheon. So he died. It's supposed to go to me. He knows that Joffrey, Tommen, and whoever else are all Jaime Lannister's kids. So it's his throne. And it really is. You know what I mean? He feels obligated to do it. He don't necessarily want it, but it's his. So he's going to follow through. He's a real noble dude. Another thing is Davos seems like he's so over all this bullshit. Over everybody, over all the Red Witch and the fire and the sacrifice. Davos is, and he, I love Davos. He's like, dude, why am I here anymore? Like, this shit is lame. What the fuck am I doing here? Another thing with Stannis' wife, don't she seem like such a fangirl of Melisandre?
Well, she feels like she failed at motherhood because she gave birth to, you know, a deformed little girl. And, you know, she thinks it's something that she did. You know, she feels that she is so guilt-ridden.
That she didn't even care that Stannis fucked Melisandre. She didn't even care. She said thank you.
She clearly doesn't know that it gave birth to the shadow creature, though. That might change her viewpoint a little bit.
Yeah, so that's all we got from Stannis. You know what, man? I've made it be known before that Daenerys' plotline really never grabbed me. And I said last episode, Stannis Baratheon looks like a 50-year-old pizza delivery man. I don't think that the guy was cast like... I wish he had a different character or something. Maybe that would help me get more wrapped up in his storyline. But when Stannis and the Red Witch are on the TV, I really don't care. Other than Davos. I love Davos. He is the man. But everybody else in that storyline really don't grab me. Okay, now we get into King's Landing.
I know with our podcast, we bounce around, you know, through storyline, but this one I think is so fitting. The scene goes from showing Reek, Theon Greyjoy, to Tyrion grabbing his sausage off a plate.
And they did that same thing last year, if you remember, when they chopped Reek's thing off. Yeah, so I think George R.R. Martin loves doing the wiener sausage transition scene. I don't know, he's a weirdo. But yes, anyways, King's Landing. We see Jaime and Tyrion, they're reunited, and they're having dinner or some kind of meal, like Wolf said. There, Podrick is serving a sausage, big rod pod, tripod.
Tripod rod.
We'll call him tripod from now on. But yeah, so anyways, we see Jaime still trying to get used to his left hand. He's banging over dishes and knocking over wine cups, and he's really frustrated. And Tyrion, being a good brother, is like, it's only wine. Who cares? He grabs his wine glass and throws wine everywhere. Jaime says, okay, look, dude, it's more than knocking over wine cups and everything. I can't fight anymore. And he's never told anybody that yet. Like, last episode, Joffrey was like, oh, a 40-year-old, one-handed knight. What can you do? You know, they took your sword hand. He's like, oh, well, I got my left, and that makes it more of a challenge. It makes it fair for everybody else. He's fronting because he really can fight. So he tells Tyrion, like, dude, I really can't fight anymore.
And what does his brother do? He helps him. If Tyrion went to Jaime about something like this, everybody would know about the weakness. He would sell him out in a second. And what does Tyrion do? Gives him Bronn to go and train him to fight. It's not that Jaime's always a complete dick to his brother. I mean, he does have fun with Tyrion. You know, since the beginning, when the show first started, they showed him in whorehouses and, you know, he bought his brother whores. But you know damn well, if Tyrion came across any kind of shortcoming, pun intended, Cersei would know. His father would know, just because of how loyal Jaime is to the Lannister clan, where this is, you know, this is just a brotherhood. Like, that's it. That's all it stops at. And Tyrion's going to do whatever he can to help his brother out.
And like Wolf said, Tyrion hooked him up with Bronn. He is a sellsword, and he's Tyrion's right-hand man. So he said, hey, you know, pay him a few gold dragons, and he'll teach you. He'll train you. You know what I mean? And he won't say anything to anybody. So we see them down where they're going to train, and Jaime is kind of skeptical, like, are you sure nobody's going to see, nobody's going to catch us? And what does Bronn say?
He says to him, this is where I take the knight's wife, and she's a screamer. And if no one hears her down here, they won't hear swords clanking. Okay, well, by him saying that, he's telling people, you know, oh, that would not console me. He could say, like, oh, I come down here and take girls down here, and no one finds out. Fine. But when you're sitting there fucking name-dropping on shit like that, it just... I'd be like, okay, well, we're just not going to do this. I can fight fine and leave.
Okay, so they do start fighting, and right out the gate, Bronn is going hard on Jaime. I don't know if it's like he has some animosity, like, you know what, or he just really wants to, like... You know, he's not going to give him no easy, like, he's going to go full force because he wants Jaime to get good, you know, because, you know, well, that's what he paid him for.
When he walked up and Jaime pulled out his real sword, he's like, you know, Valyrian steel. He goes, well, if you're going to have a bladed sword, I'm going to have one too. And Jaime's like, well, I haven't used training swords, whatever. Bronn's like, I don't give a shit. Like, you know, in any other world, you'd rule me. I think the reason why he has such an attitude is because he's finally over someone of, you know, of distinctive, like, family and lineage. He has the power in this situation, and he does it. And he shows him what it's like, and he whoops him.
Nailed it, dude. And he has kind of the power over Tyrion, too, because Tyrion is a mind, but Bronn is what keeps him alive. So, yeah, dude, Bronn is the man right now, and I can tell you love Bronn.
Bronn is my favorite character. For all of our Walking Dead listeners, he's Daryl. He is the absolute quintessential You want to survive in this world? This is what you do. You can play little games here and there, but be as straightforward as you can and back it up. Don't write checks your ass can't cash.
And you know, like you brought up last week when he was shooting the shit with Prince Oberyn, he don't give a fuck about royalty. He don't care who you are. He don't care if you're highborn. He's like, I'm Braun. I'll fuck you up.
And everybody else, they get in their feelings hurt as soon as someone says something offensive. Braun doesn't even give them the opportunity to one up them that way. He's like, it's going to go down to physicality, and that's it. He, you know, like, they always try to exchange words, and he's always like this. What? I mean, do you remember my favorite character, the Hound? Do you remember how many seasons ago was that when he had that interaction?
Like two, like right before the battle of the Black Brother.
They went back and forth with each other, and finally, like, you know what? This works with everybody else. Fuck it. They're about to fight. I mean, it just doesn't work. Words don't work with those two.
And in King's Landing, nobody would challenge the Hound. And I got a naked chick on my lap right now, but I'll still put her down and fuck you up. So yeah, Braun is the man. A real quick note here. In the book, it is a little bit different than it is in the show right now with Jaime. Jaime was not in King's Landing in the book when all this was going on. Jaime actually learned to fight with his left with Ilyn Payne. They were on a mission, and every night, Jaime would give a sword to Ilyn Payne, and they would go hide away somewhere in the woods, and they would train. And Ilyn Payne would bruise him up, and the reason why Jaime picked Ilyn Payne is because he don't have a tongue, so he can't tell anybody that Jaime can't fight anymore. But yeah, the actor who does play Ilyn Payne, I checked into it, and he has cancer. So I think that's maybe why they went with Braun. And plus, Braun has been a real big part of the show, and I guess maybe they just wanted to give the actor another look of having him, you know, slide into this role to teach Jaime how to fight with his left. Now it is time for, I guess, the wedding shower, like the wedding breakfast or what have you. Mm. And we see Varys, Tyrion, and Podrick. And Varys says, hey, man, Cersei found out about Shay. And we brought it up last week. Sansa's other chambermaid dimed Tyrion out and said, I know the real whore, and that is who it is. So Tyrion's like, shit, okay, we got to get her out of here because my dad said if he finds another whore here, he'll hang her. So she has to go. And Varys says, well, why don't you tell her? He's like, dude, I've threatened her so many times that you're going to die, they're going to kill you, that she don't even take my threat serious anymore.
That's why when he did it, he was so harsh and talking about how you're just another whore. No, he had to do it the way he did it. He had to show her that he didn't love her. And you could tell he did such a great job of showing that he didn't, but still showing that he did. Like, you knew he was in pain.
He had to take another route because them are idle threats in her opinion, you know what I mean? So Tyrion was like, she's not going to believe me if I tell her they're going to kill her, so let me take a different approach and tell her, you're a whore. I don't love you. What I never did. On that same side of the coin, we see Tywin Lannister and Olenna, the Queen of Thorns, walking to the breakfast, wedding shower thing, whatever. And here we find out how in debt the Iron Throne is right now. And Olenna brings it up to Tywin. Keep in mind, Tywin is rich as fuck, okay? He don't have debt, but the Iron Throne does have debt. The title, the king has debt right now to the Bank of Braavos. But Tywin Lannister has money. So he's the one coming out of pocket paying for the wedding. Usually they would take a loan from the bank or pay for it themselves, but they owe so covers. Right, they owe so much money because Littlefinger fucked the money off when he was the master of coin, and Olenna's like, oh, don't act like you don't care about the Bank of Braavos, and he's like, you know, I don't. And a little tidbit here, for those who don't know how the Bank of Braavos does their work, is if you owe them money and don't pay them back, the amount that you owe them, they'll take that amount and give it to your enemies to fund their army against you to come kill you. So they're not to be taken lightly at all.
How come Littlefinger's still alive? To me, that's confusing. Like, you get killed in King's Landing for looking at someone. This motherfucker put that place in debt and potential at harm at another war now because of how much money they did take. It's just amazing to me that he's still alive. You know, if he can come and go as he pleases, and no one even bats an eyelash.
Also, a little quote I liked is when Olenna told Tywin, are you ever going to have fun before you die? Like, do you know what fun is? Can you have some fucking fun?
Like, so what? You have money. Do you not enjoy it?
Money can't buy you happiness. Another thing I found hilarious is when Olenna and Tywin were talking and Mace Tyrell came up and he kind of wanted to be like, hey, I'm here. She was like, Mace, get the fuck out of here. I'm busy right now talking. Like,
who's the real ruler?
Exactly. Grown-ups are talking right now. Run along, son. Now we are at the royal breakfast. We see Joffrey and Margaery and Tywin and Tyrion and Mace Tyrell and everybody on the dais. And here they're presenting gifts to Joffrey. And Mace Tyrell, Margaery's father, gives him a big-ass golden chalice with diamonds and rubies, and it's a crazy-ass big cup. And
Lil Jon will be part of that cup.
So Joffrey has a pimp cup. Pimp Joff. I don't know if he ever got to drink out of the pimp cup because, you know what I mean, but hey, he has one. So he says, thank you, you know, you're my father, you're a father to me now, blah, 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 touching, beautiful bullshit. Okay, so Tyrion, it's time for him to present Joffrey with the gift, and he gives him a Book of Kings, like the past Book of
Thousand
Kings.
Thousand-year-old history book.
He's like, every king should read this, dude, it's very,
it's knowledgeable. Read your past so you don't make the same mistakes in the future.
And then Joffrey, I was like, wow, because he was like, thank you, Uncle. It like, I'm like, me and my girlfriend both looked at each other like, Joffrey, is that you? Like, well, what? Like, so that was pretty crazy that Joffrey actually was kind of Tyrion. But the next gift that was presented to him, and we spoke about this sword last week, is Tywin presented him with the other half of Ned Stark's sword, Ice, the other Valyrian steel blade. Remember, he gave Jaime one.
Just like in the Battle of Blackwater. What does he do? He swings it on and, what should I name this sword? And it's so cheesy because he tries to act like he's so battle-hardened and he's never taken a life.
And what a dick. He said, man, widow's wail. Every time I hold this sword, it's going to remind me of when I took Ned Stark's head. What a dick. Right in front of Sansa, too, you know what I mean?
Sansa hasn't come into her. She's had so many opportunities. We've talked about it so many times that she could have left so many times, and she's still there. She's a glutton for punishment.
The book that Joffrey so graciously thanked Tyrion for, he takes Widow's Wail and chops it to pieces. It's shreds and in shreds, and he's chopping the fuck out of the book. And in true Joffrey fashion, he redeemed himself as being a dickhead. He's no good qualities about this little fuck. He's an ass. Okay, so they take a break before the royal wedding, and Tyrion goes back to his bedchamber, and Shay is there. As always, you know, she's ready. She wants to get it on. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. And she's like, where will you have me? And he was like, to the docks you go. Like, you're out of here. And she's confused. Like, what are you talking about? And like we said, Tyrion, you know, he's like, yo, I can't threat this girl no more because she's not scared of anything. So I have to take a different approach. And I'm going to pretend that I'm done with her. Our friendship has to end. I'm tired of fucking you. How many guys have you fucked? You know what I mean? You're a whore. I'm married.
But she flips the script and says, how many whores have you fucked?
She did go tit for tat with them, for sure. So, he tells her pretty much, you're a whore. I'll never put a baby inside of you. I'm married to a highborn. Get the fuck out of here. Bronn walks in the room. Shay breaks down and starts crying. I mean, did you feel any kind of sympathy for Shay at all? Or I hate her.
Shay could have died 2 seasons ago.
True. I mean, but nothing. You didn't feel bad, like,
no, because it's the one weakness that Tyrion had, and I didn't like it because to me she's not worth it. Yeah, it's fine. He found true love. Blah blah blah. You know, no, Tyrion doesn't need this. I think with her gone, I think you're able to see. Well, you could have seen what he really could have became.
So Bronn takes her to the ship. Like Wolf alluded to earlier, when they're on their way to the royal wedding, he tells Tyrion, it's done. You know, she got on the ship, trust me, it's done. We see Tyrion right now, he's like, he don't want her to go, but he knows that she has to go, otherwise she's gonna die. And also, he's probably thinking, like, I bet she didn't even get on the ship in the first fucking place, because she's so goddamn hard-headed that she probably didn't leave anyway. But Bronn reassured him, like, yeah, man, she got on the ship, all said and done. Time for the purple wedding. With the ceremony going on, what I liked about it is we see so many different characters interact with each other that we've never even seen cross paths before. You know, we get Jaime and Ser Loras, and they're fighting over Cersei. Jaime's like, oh, so you're going to marry my sister. But that'll never happen because
she'll either kill you if you happen to get her pregnant. She'll kill the baby. Loras came back with the little incest joke about, you know, you're never going to marry her either, pat her on the shoulder. And then they go over to Cersei and Brienne, and right away there's this little thing, too, again, that shows how Cersei has, like, not a brother or sister love. You know, she's like, are you in love with her? It's like two girlfriends fighting over the same guy.
Okay, let me ask you this. Cersei pretty much broke up with Jaime last week. Why the fuck would she care anyway? She shit on Jaime. Why would she care? Do you think Cersei really don't care and just wants nobody to be happy? Or is it a deeper thing?
She still has some weird, sick, and twisted love infatuation with her brother. I don't know. I mean, if she's not, then she's a very unique person.
Another awesome, epic clash we got was Tywin and Cersei versus Prince Oberyn and his bastard girlfriend. Oberyn is a beast.
You walk up and you've got a whore in your arm and you're owning Tywin Lannister like that?
It is time for the Radcast Badass. Quote of the Week.
People everywhere have their differences. In some places, the highborn frown upon those of low birth. In other places, the rape and murder of women and children is considered distasteful. What a fortunate thing for you, former Queen Regent,
that your daughter Myrcella has been sent to live in the latter sort of place.
In King's Landing speak, he said, motherfucker, you set the fucking mountain after my family and had them slaughtered.
Dude, Oberyn is walking around like he has an 18-foot dick.
Yeah, well.
That dude.
Maybe he's tripod talk too.
That dude has so much confidence, man. Like, we saw last week. Nobody can really match him when it comes to talking. We saw fighting-wise, too, man. He'll put a dagger through your fucking wrist and not think twice about it. So he's going to be a force to be reckoned with, and we're going to see where his storyline goes. Of course, at a wedding, you got the festivities. And we have the band or the singers playing the Reigns of Castamere. And in the book, there's like 4 billion renditions of the Reigns of Castamere at this wedding. And everybody's sick and tired of hearing it, but it's the Lannister house song. Joffrey gets up, takes a handful of gold, and throws it at him like, okay, enough, get out of here. I'm done with you.
He was so bored with all the entertainment at the wedding that, you know, he had the jester, which was Dantos, and he paid the crowd a golden dragon to throw whoever knocks his hat off, and Dantos runs off. You know, he's sitting there, and he doesn't want to do anything with the band anymore. Stands up, throws money at him. You know, and then he gets so pissed off because he doesn't like seeing other people happy. He stands up and makes that announcement that this is a royal wedding. This isn't about amusement. He's like basically saying this is a historical event. This should not be like a celebration like normal weddings. But at the same time, then he goes, well, we have one more thing. And he says, bring on the entertainment. And what does he do? He has 5 little people come out dressed as the 5 kings. I mean, you have people, and they reenact some of the most horrific scenes ever from these shows, and you have people sitting all around you that have lost a loved one that you're depicting this in this humor joke. And the worst part about it is, you're really making fun of your uncle. It just shows how much lack of respect Joffrey has, and I don't know, he's just an idiot, though, because he thinks he's, like, indestructible.
Yeah, dude, this king shit has gotten to his head. It's like, dude, you're not a warrior. You've never fought. You're a skinny little incest-looking fucker. Tyrion has smacked you a couple times, and you haven't even done nothing back to him. You're a pussy. Don't act like you're tough. Okay, so in this, we get the dwarves, and we have the Renly dwarf, and he's pretending to be a homosexual. When doing this, Loras, Renly's boyfriend, gets pissed and leaves. You know, Margaery and the rest of the Tyrells are looking in disgust, like, what the fuck, dude? You know what I mean?
I mean, they show that Robb Stark, and they show after they die, they show him cutting the wolf head and having sex with it. And, you know, just complete desecration of these houses.
And then after that's all said and done, he says, well, wait, they're not done yet. We got another challenger. Why don't you join the party, uncle? Tyrion says, well, you know, I have led the city in victories before on the Blackwater. He said, why don't you go down there? Because I've seen firsthand that you're not battle-tested and approved, and you ran away when he pretty much put Joffrey out there. He saw firsthand in the Battle of the Blackwater that Joffrey ran like a bitch. So he pretty much called Joff out in front of everybody. So then Joffrey, being the little bitch he is, walks over to Tyrion and pours his wine on his head.
And what does Tyrion say back to him? Oh, you spilled your wine. And he goes, I didn't spill my wine. And then he makes him his wine bitch.
And you know what's so funny is when he makes him his wine bitch, Tyrion's like, thank you, it's a great honor. Tyrion knows how to deflect insults.
And he goes, I didn't mean it to be an honor.
He's so dumb. He don't know. Like, Joffrey's like, it's not an honor. But Tyrion is so smart and so much vastly superior to Joffrey in every way that he's deflecting. You remember 8 Mile, the Eminem movie, when Eminem went to battle everybody at the last... In the battle, he made fun of himself, so the other dudes really had nothing to say back to him. Same shit here. Tyrion, you know, Joffrey was trying to belittle him, and Tyrion was flipping and like, oh, thank you, that's such a great honor. So Tyrion, you can't fuck with him when it comes to wits. So, Tyrion is a good little cupbearer, and he fills Joffrey's cup. Joff slugs down, you know, the cup, and he says, fill it again. And he drops the cup, and he kicks the cup under the table. Who picks the cup up?
Sansa.
I rewound this scene about 15 times, and to me, it looked like Sansa may had put something in that cup before she handed it back to Tyrion. Now, am I totally out to lunch here? Am I losing my mind, or did you see the same thing I did?
I did not see that. I will actually, when we're done with this, go back and rewatch it to see that.
Sansa gave the cup back to Tyrion. Tyrion filled the cup up and gave it to Joffrey. Now this whole time, Joff is being a complete and utter dick, and Margaery's trying to deflect. All are like, come back to me, my love. But in this case, she was like, oh, the pie's here. So they bring out the big wedding pie. So Joffrey takes his attention off Tyrion.
Pulls out his Valyrian sword, takes a big whack at the pie. You know, to me, that's a pretty big pie. That could have been a surprise for you. Like, there could have been a person in there. He doesn't care. And there were birds in it.
Right, so he frees the birds, and he's ready to eat the pie. They bring him a piece. Takes a bite of the pie, and he kind of starts coughing. And Sansa told Tyrion, hey, can we go now? Like, she was done. And they were heading off. And Joffrey said, wait a minute. Where are you guys going? And Tyrion said, well, you just poured wine on me, so I'm going to go change out of my clothes.
And Sansa's not feeling well.
No. You're just fine. Your clothes are fine. You'll stay here and have a piece of pie. So Joff takes another bite. He starts coughing a little bit more. Everybody's kind of like looking, and Joff is like, no, I'm fine, it's dry, the pie's dry. So he takes the wine cup and he slugs the rest of the wine down to try to wet his throat.
Joffrey was making a dry, cracking noise, trying to speak. His eyes bulged white with terror, and he lifted a hand, reaching for his uncle or pointing. Is he begging my forgiveness, or does he think I can save him?
Everybody here is freaking out. Tyrion is even like, my lord, you know, your grace, are you okay? And Olenna, Margaery's grandmother, is screaming, help the king, you fool!
They start going to the key, they start putting the camera on all the key people in the episode at this point in time. And at this time, too, people still think, oh, he's just choking. Till Cersei runs over and flips him over, and what's happening to him? Turning purple.
So Joff is puking up all kind of shit. And you know what was crazy with Jaime? Like I said, he wasn't here in the books when all this was happening, but he was there. He ran. He was one of the first people to Joffrey, and they're trying to, you know, take his shirt off and kind of try to help him breathe. And in all this confusion, we see the Jester. And
he comes back and grabs Sansa.
And before they leave, he says, if you want to live, we have to go now. So Sansa and Dantos leave. They break out. Joff is just getting worse and worse, convulsing and coughing. And
now blood's coming out.
Out of every orifice in his face, his eyes are bleeding, his nose is bleeding, everybody's freaking out, and he is dead. Joffrey Baratheon is finished.
Alleluia, 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 alleluia.
He goes cold in Cersei's arms, the camera pans up, and who do we see?
Tyrion holding the cup, looking at like in dismay, like, is this what killed him?
And then Cersei, because when Joffrey, his last second of life, he kind of pointed to Tyrion. So Jaime and Cersei both look at Tyrion, and in Cersei's infinite wisdom, she thinks it's a sign.
She screams out, you did it.
Yeah,
he did it. Get him.
So that's where the episode ends. Holy shit. Joffrey is dead. They're arresting Tyrion.
At first, I was kind of like, oh, you know, I was kind of disappointed because I didn't read anything past this episode, and I was kind of disappointed with the fact that Joffrey didn't die a more painful death. I thought he should have been tortured, kind of thing like that, but Maester Smith educated me with, no, this is Game of Thrones. He's dead because of the way he played the game, but there's no justice.
I really wanted to see him go out worse too. Like, what did we expect though? A dragon to eat him alive, or for Ramsay to torture him like he did Theon and cut off his wiener? But he died in front of everybody. His mom, his grandfather, his dad slash uncle, all the king's people. He died like a bitch, choking in front of everybody. So, shit, he went out. I'm glad he's dead. I'm going to miss hating him, because I did enjoy hating Joffrey on screen. So I'm going to miss that. But I am happy that Joffrey is fucking dead. Well, what are your thoughts? Are you going to miss Joffrey at all? Are you going to miss hating him?
It's a great dynamic, polar opposite of like your good characters. You have the extreme bad. Because in Game of Thrones, one week you can hate someone, and the next week you could love someone. Like Jaime Lannister. But with Joffrey, there was no redemption with him. He was pure shit.
So with that, the episode is a wrap. Wolf, what do you give it on the Radcast 1 through 10 scale?
10.
Another 10.
Another 10.
So last week was a 10, this week is a 10.
Every week in a row, for me, you have to top the last week. The first one, perfect. Got a 10. That means every other episode has to be that much better just to get that score.
Last week I gave the episode a 9.5. This week I love the episode. I think I gotta give it the same, man, a 9.5. I mean, I didn't think it was a perfect episode, but it was very close to being a perfect episode. Like I said, the only thing that maybe didn't make it a perfect episode for me is because Joffrey's death in the book is so epic, and my mind just made it to be something that I don't think any TV show could have ever captured, because I pictured madness. But I think they did a fantastic job. The costumes, the set, everything looked amazing. Moving on, I mean, in the future, this really sets things in motion. What's going to happen to Tyrion? Are they going to put him in the black cells where Ned Stark was? I mean, it's obvious that he's going to go on a trial. I mean, we saw all that with the season 4 trailer. So we got the Tyrion trial coming up. Where's Sansa going to be next episode? How are they going to mourn Joffrey? Are we going to get more of Arya and the Hound next week? I mean, it's going to be crazy. So what are you looking most forward to next week?
If they follow true to form Game of Thrones, we won't see anything about the wedding on next week's episode. I would love it if they would show some kind of closure with that. I think next week I'm excited to see a little bit of the Jon Snow. Because I'm really intrigued with what they have coming down from the north.
Next week, I hope we get some more Arya and the Hound. I mean, from that little spot in the first episode, that got me crazy. So I am intrigued with Ramsay and Theon, and so I want to see more of that progress, and pretty much everything. I mean, they could leave out Stannis and Daenerys if they want to, but everything else I'm fully intrigued in. With that being said, that is the cast. Thank you for listening in. We will be back here next week, same time, to talk about episode 3 of season 4. If you have any questions for us, contact us at theradcast@yahoo.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Talon Couture. Also, take a minute out of your day. If you download the show from iTunes or Stitcher, leave us a rating. Tell us what you like about the show, what you would like to see more of, what we can improve on. And that's pretty much it. So on behalf of my pal, The Wolf, I'm Talon Couture. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.
Later.